Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. What a weekend! Lots of bullets flying in the air. Hey, it's going to be summertime. The 201st mass shooting. We've had 201 mass shootings. I guess pandemic's over. I guess that would be the message, that we're back. This is, I'm guessing, this is crazy town. And what are we getting? Well, like we get with every shooting. Thoughts and prayers. No policy. No. Hey, we're going to do something. No. None of that. Just thoughts and prayers. And more deference to guns. Because again, it's not the guns that kill people. Remember, and this is my NRA friends telling me this all the time: guns don't kill people, Rick. People do. But again, gun helps. It's a lot easier to kill a bunch of people when you've got the gun. And the big story over the weekend clearly was the 18-year-old kid who walked into a supermarket in a black neighborhood and decided that he was going to shoot the place up. Decided he was going to live stream it on Twitch so all of the other crazy white supremacist morons could see exactly. And here's the weird part of all of this. You know, again, this is not surprised by it. I mean, this is white supremacy at its worst. This is, having this kind of, white nationalism jammed down our throats. We'll talk about grooming in a moment, but this is scary stuff. And idiocy, the argument of the great replacement theory folks. The white replacement theory, folks, is that, we're bringing in all of the others. And again, this is to keep white people angry and on edge and, pitted against everyone. Because if you remember last election, the whole CRT thing, the old theory about race that's critical, thing that got Youngkin elected in Virginia and all of that, it's all about scaring Whitey. And they did. They scared Whitey. The white suburban soccer moms, the security moms, scared to death that their little angels might actually, learn something. It's terrible. But we never hear about the white replacement theory that's being jammed down their throats. And you go, but Rick, what's this? What is this thing you speak? It's what the right has been pushing for decades. This isn't new. So this nitwit gets a gun, 18 years old, decides he's going to go shoot up this supermarket of people who just want to, just do another daily chore, grab some groceries, take home to their family. No, not on this day. Because he wrote a 180-page manifesto. And I got to wonder if any of his teachers thought it was capable, this kid would have been capable of writing 180 pages. Because you look at him, doesn't look like much, looks like a loser to me. Looks like someone who would be taken in by the extreme right wing and the message that the reason your life is not going to be all that is because of those people. It's not that you're a moron, not that you're not particularly interesting. I mean, the other part of this is they're arguing that the others are out procreating. The weird part of this is an 18-year-old, wouldn't the argument of, the other side's out procreating us, maybe, hey, pick it up. Maybe that sounds a lot more fun. maybe we should go out and spread the word, spread the seed a little bit, populate with people who look like, you know, kind of. That sounds a lot more fun than going and shooting up a place, spending the rest of my life in jail or being killed. Oh, wait a minute. He was never going to be killed because he's a white kid. It's amazing how we never take them out. In fact, Dylan Roof, the shooter from South Carolina, we took him to Burger King. This kid went with the intention of killing as many black people as possible. And in fact, there's a video going around on the Twitters where he turns the gun on a white guy laying on the ground. And he's like, oh, sorry. And walks on. This wasn't about killing as many people as possible. This was about killing as many black people as possible. But Rick, we don't have a race problem. You know, the right doesn't see, they don't see color. They're living Dr. King's dream of, oh, what about, who am I kidding? Now understand what the far right ideology of replacement theory, that the Steve Bannons of the world keep pushing. The Republican Party has been pushing for a very long time. This idea that we're bringing in all these others, the non-whites, and we're promoting them to have children so that we can that you'll limit the power of white people politically and culturally. We're going to take over and we're going to change everything. And you white people, you're just going to have to like it, which is kind of weird and fearful. And this is what happens when you have diminished opportunities. And again, this comes back to the limited economic opportunities that people across this country have had. It's the Hunger Games at the next step. But this is what the right-wing media has been feeding people. It's the outrage candy. They've been shoving down, these chaos merchants like Tucker Carlson have been shoving down people's throats. In fact, someone did a story where Tucker Carlson back in 2018 opined. Of course, all of them. Here's what Tucker had to say. How precisely is diversity our strength? Since you've made this our new national motto, please be specific as you explain it. Can you think, for example, of other institutions such as, I don't know, marriage or military units, in which the less people have in common, the more cohesive they are? Do you get along better with your neighbors or coworkers if you can't understand each other and share no common values? This is to say that they don't speak they don't speak your language. They're different. You look at this kid's 180-page manifesto. They put out a little clip of it. He asked the same question. You know, why is diversity the greatest strength? Does anyone ask why? Yeah, Tucker, that's how you got it in your head, kid. The right-wing media has been jamming this down your throat probably since you were a little kid. He says this idiot goes on to say, it's spoken like a mantra and repeated ad infinitum. Diversity is our greatest strength. Diversity is our greatest strength. Said throughout the media, spoken by politicians, educators, celebrities, but no one ever seems to give a reason why. This is craziness speaking. This is fear. This is anger. And I love how the media kind of lone wolf. This kid wasn't a lone wolf. This kid was groomed. This kid was put into this position. This kid was the result of a media culture, a right-wing culture that groomed this kid. Go to any right-wing website. Go to any of them. And it is wall-to-wall gun porn. It's wall-to-wall macho gun porn. You look at our politicians like Lauren Boebert and Thomas Massey with their Christmas-style clothing and their gun fetish. You know, I remember looking at Boebert's Christmas card picture. And there they are, all the kids with, you know, young kids, you know, sporting their guns. And you go, is this what the goal is? To create these kind of hate mongers that are going to perpetrate these kind of hateful crimes? I look at Thomas Massey, the congressman from Kentucky, with his single shot M60. I mean, it's this giant gun he's holding. Everyone else has got the good old AR-15s, but he's got this single shot M60. It's a massive looks manly, looks manly. But it's, for him, it's nothing but a giant sex toy. It's like his inflatable woman. It's grotesque. But that's the culture. It's how they're grooming their children to be Christian warriors. To be warriors for the faith, for the ideology. This is scary. Because this is meant to keep us pitted against each other. This is meant to keep us hating each other. So that we never come together. We never get an America that gives us opportunities. That never get an America where we can go as far as our talents take us, where we never get to share in the wealth that we create. And what they do so well is they continue to tear us apart. I mean, I look at Tom Cotton. He's got a new book coming out, the senator from Arkansas. You know, Obama and Biden, you know, they've weakened America. They've emboldened our enemies. They've sabotaged America. This kind of hate rhetoric. And look, you know, they know it's BS. They know they're just selling books. They know they're just getting attention. But these idiot 18-year-olds, I would argue that, you know, my original premise of it's a lot more fun to repopulate. If your argument is there aren't enough white people, go out and repopulate. The reason is that you look at this kid. Fortunately, there was no woman willing to repopulate with him. And I think that's a big part of the problem. Take a shower, clean yourself up, get a future. Maybe you got a chance. But you look at these people and it's frightening. Because while the leaders, they know what the game is. These people, well, I think George Carlin said it best. You know, imagine how stupid the average person is, and then realize that half the people are dumber than that. This is what we've got. This is the scary moment. And over this weekend, this wasn't the only shooting. You had multiple people shot in Laguna Woods, California, at a church. A Chinese guy shooting Taiwanese people. So the message there is, hey, if you want to kill people, come to America. You know, we'll give you guns and it'll be pretty easy. We saw multiple shootings in Wisconsin after the Bucks game. In Texas, Houston at a flea market. You know, we see them in Chicago. Shootings all over the place. And I argue it comes back to lack of opportunity, lack of hope, lack of direction for a country because of the mass inequality that we're suffering. Love to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. This is one of these moments where Democrats get your head out of the sand. You want an issue? This is every word out of your mouth should be the right is the party of white replacement theory, the grievance party. This is who they are. This is not a single one-off. This is what they promote. This is who they're grooming. For me, it's that simple. Love to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, more to get to. Also, your thoughts. If you miss any of today's program, make sure you download the podcast. Always there, always available. Subscribe, share, comment, all of that. Quick break, right back after this.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickssmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs. in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Linda sent me an email during the break sending me this Rolling Stone article saying just what I was saying. You know, this isn't a lone wolf. This isn't a one-off. This is the mainstream Republican Party. And thank you for the email, Linda. No, this is exactly who the Republicans are grooming. This is exactly who they are. They don't get to run from this anymore. There's no more, hey, thoughts and prayers. No. We need action in this moment. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Frustrated, angry.
I know the feeling. You know, what I wanted to say was, Americans, for the most part, we are extremely ignorant, not only of our own American history, but of history, period. And the thing is, this great replacement theory and all these other conspiracy nonsense, the Democrats eating babies and the whole market, these have all been used for over 1,500 years.
Yep.
Only before it was the Jews. It was the Jewish people. And they just keep recycling over and over, and they just replace it with the traditional, you know, with the new other person. It's what they do. And the Republicans, well, you know, the Republicans, the evangelical so-called Christians, they are wondrous at pushing lies and propaganda, which kind of cracks me up, since one is supposed to be the party of family values, which, by the way, the Charles Manson family had better values, and the other ones are not supposed to lie or bear false witness, but yet they do it.
Yep. And they're the pro-life party as well. Let's not forget that.
Oh, no, by all means, pro-life. But, you know, it's just ridiculous. And I want to put this one little thing in there for your viewers, your little right-wing viewers, like that little Jeff that was listening and wrote you the email that was just ridiculous. Listen, honey, you little boys out there, most women like a man who has an IQ that is bigger than their waist size. So, mayhap, if you clean yourself up and study a little bit, you'll find yourself a girl instead of being an incel.
There you go.
So have a good evening.
Thank you so much, Alice. I appreciate it. No, that's the answer right there. I think if he had had an opportunity, maybe, who knows? We'll see. Here's an interesting story. Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, signed a piece of legislation that'll make protesting outside a person's home illegal. I know where this is coming from. You know, since the leaked memo from the Supreme Court that will inevitably overturn Roe versus Wade, some folks went out and protested it in front of Brett Kavanaugh's house very peacefully. You had some people dress up in handmaidens costumes and march around in front of Amy Covid Barrett's house. You had someone put chalk on the sidewalk in front of Senator Susan Collins' house. She was very upset about that. Well, they have now passed a law outlawing that. It is now illegal to protest out in front of someone's house. Now, understand, you know, when the crazy right wing were out in front of doctors' homes who work at women's clinics, you know, they were looked on as brave. But going to the Supreme Court justice's home, that's too far. Remember, you know, blowing up a clinic and killing doctors, blowing off steam. The other part of this is also opening, or more likely closing, a door on workers grabbing their pitchforks and marching to the CEO's humble multi-million-dollar abodes across this country. As you saw the story over the weekend, that CEO pay
has risen to $14.7 million. And you go, why are we not surprised? The sixth straight record year for compensation for our CEO friends. In fact, nine CEOs are making in excess of $50 million a year. But hey, hey, can't raise that minimum wage, that pesky $7.25 an hour minimum wage. Nope, can't do that at all. Bad, bad, bad. In fact, median salary for our CEO class, $4.1 million. And you go, exactly what are we doing? Oh, yeah, we're making the wealthy wealthier while the working class is getting stiffed. And yet all the messaging we hear, and this is brilliant, the right wing and their outrage machine, I look at the baby formula thing. This is something people should be marching to CEOs' homes over. But we're blaming Biden for it. And it's ridiculous that it's Biden's fault. You know, all of this inflation pointing at Biden is ridiculous. It got me thinking today. Do you know who's never made a can of baby formula? Our government. Joe Biden has never made a can of baby formula. And I'm okay with that. As much as I think our government should do in making people's lives better, things that we should do to get done, making baby formula not part of the idea or the plan. Nope, not at all. And it's amazing to me how stupid the right-wing spin machine knows their audience is, because they are. And like I said, the old Carlin line, you know, think of how stupid the average person is and then realize half of them are stupider than that. And this is where the F channel and all of the right-wing blather machine, this is where they live. They live in that world where we know, well, the Trump line, I love the poorly educated. Because we can, if we feed them the outrage candy enough and give them a boogeyman, give them someone to be outraged over, that's where they can focus. And then we can fleece them. We can rob them blind. We can get them to buy our, look, Biden did this stickers and have them slap them all over the place. We can get them to buy our T-shirts and our hats and all of our garbage. Because they think, oh, we're fighting the good fight, when really all they're doing is screwing themselves and the rest of us by dividing us and pitting us against each other and not focusing on the real problem, which is these CEOs and the policies that are being shoved down our throat by corporate lobbyists. Consolidation is our biggest problem. Mass inequality is our biggest problem. Corporate dominance, that's our problem. And the sooner we wake up to each other as the solution, the better off we're going to be. The sooner that we can stand together and go, you know what? No, you're not the problem. No, you're not the problem. You may look a little different. You may sound a little different. You may be from somewhere else, but you're not the problem. That white guy in the corner office making the, you know, $14 gazillion a year, that's the problem. The guy who's paying the lobbyists millions of dollars to buy our political system. That's the problem. And the sooner we fight back to that, the sooner we get out of this eating each other, the sooner we can finally do what needs to be done. And that's break out the barbecue, break out the pitchforks, and all we got to do is eat one of the rich. That's all. Not all of them. Just one. And we start taxing them at an appropriate rate. We go after corporate America and break up these big conglomerates. The fact that four companies control 90% of the baby formula industry in this country is ridiculous. But that's our reality. It's ain't Biden's fault. It's consolidation. It's capitalism. That's the problem.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, a little back and forth between the president and, well, I guess this was between Jeff Bezos and the president, because the president put out a tweet on inflation and getting you know, the likes of corporate America to pay their fair share. His tweet was, you want to bring down inflation? Let's make sure the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share. Something I've tweeted out, something I've said probably 1,000 times. We should be raising taxes on the very wealthy, not on the working class. I believe in redistributive policies. If corporate America has never been doing better, maybe it's time for them to kick in a little bit to help those who are struggling in this moment, to which Jeff Bezos, I guess, couldn't help himself. He tweeted back, the newly created disinformation board should review this tweet, or maybe they need to form a new non sequitur board instead. Raising corp taxes is fine to discuss. Taming inflation is critical to discuss. Mushing them together is just misdirection. I don't know. I don't think I agree. And here to give some thoughts on whether it's fair to put them together or if Bezos is right, I've asked our good friend Matthew Gardner to come talk with us. Matthew's a senior fellow at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Their website, ITEP.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can check out the work that they do. Matthew, thanks for taking time for us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So is it a fair assessment what Bezos is saying, that, you know, putting them together, that's a misdirection? I kind of think they do go hand in hand a little bit.
Well, it's not the first rationale I'd come up with for why we need to restructure our corporate taxes. Let me say it that way. Obviously, it's a concern. And there has been some pretty interesting work done in the last couple of months. The Guardian had a pretty good report looking at corporate earnings announcements, corporate earnings reports, and noting that a lot of very large companies in very many sectors are enjoying huge profits and are in some cases making what appear to be sort of discretionary price increases, right? They have the option to keep prices where they are, but instead they're making price increases sort of a profit center for them. So I think, you know, certainly there's some indications that some of the inflation we're seeing might be discretionary, but that isn't sort of the way I would lead into the argument for corporate tax reform. We know that it's vital. We know that it's been long overdue. We know, as we've discussed before, that Congress and then President Trump missed a really important opportunity to fix our corporate tax system back in 2017, and that we desperately need it right now. You know, the main benefit of that is of doing that when we do it isn't going to be some sort of, meaningful impact on inflation. The main benefit's going to be that we can pay for the things we want to pay for as a nation.
Yeah, but I look at this and, you know, you listen to these corporate earnings calls. You see the fact that, you know, that corporate America hasn't been this profitable since the 50s. All of this stuff that's out there, and you go, they're making choices to raise prices. They're making choices not to ramp up production like they said in the oil industry. They're making choices to create this inflation. We could argue what the rationale is. Is it simply greed and opportunism to line their pockets? Is it because, hey, they hate Biden's policies and letting workers organize? We could argue why, but the reality is it's what they're doing. So the response to this, to me, has got to be, okay, if this is your response, our response is a windfall profits tax in this moment to help offset. That seems to be a logical response. How crazy am I?
Not crazy. And, you know, I think we've seen a number of proposals of various designs just in the last year that would target specific sectors or specific companies that appear to have done really well during the COVID era. Through no special effort they made, they just happened to be in the right sector, or they have a near monopoly, on, as is maybe the case with Amazon increasingly. And, you know, you want to see companies in this sort of situation pay something approaching the fair tax rate, the 21% statutory rate we have right now. I'd push even further and say, you know, forget about windfall profits. It's important. It's especially egregious right now when we see so many people, you know, clearly suffering from the effects of price increases. Just trying to fill their car with gas is a shocking experience now, let alone going to the grocery store and buying these essentials. But even when that, and so it really rings false to see companies paying low rates right now, but even during good times, throughout the business cycle, we know that there's this mind-numbing regularity where if you're a profitable Fortune 500 corporation, you got a pretty good shot at getting your tax down to zero,
right?
Just as a regular course of business. That, I think, is what really needs to be fixed. I mean, excess profits, sure. We need to think about why our tax system doesn't appear able to reach everyday profits. As an example, we did a study a couple of years ago looking at, you know, basically most of the business cycle, the entire period from 2008 to 2015. Every company that was in the Fortune 500 during that period and was consistently profitable in the U.S. over that period. And what we found was that as a group, they were paying maybe half the statutory tax rate, but that 40% of the companies we looked at found a way, despite being profitable, to pay zero in at least 1 year during that period. And this is across all economic sectors. It's not like a tech story and a pharma story, although we've heard lots of companies like that. You know, it's Molson Coors, it's Ford, it's all these very conventional across the economy retail folks. And so that is the real problem. We need to get to a place where in any given year, not just in a pandemic year, we have a tax system that can even lay a glove on these hugely profitable, immensely influential corporations and their leaders.
Yeah. Now, back in February, you guys did a report on Amazon where you said that Amazon avoided about $5.2 billion in corporate federal income taxes in 2021. Now, they had a bumper year in 2020, 2021. They should have been paying, you know, an enormous amount of tax. And yet, as you pointed out, there's all this way to get away from it. They saved themselves about $5.2 billion. And you've got Bezos now going, well, no, this isn't how you should do it. No, don't tax us. I'm literally dumbfounded by where we are in this moment.
Yeah. Well, you know, certainly apart from the inflation thing, the notion that Bezos would be at all sympathetic to the project of, you know, sustainable corporate tax reform is pretty laughable on its face. I mean, to me, the first thing to say about Amazon as a company and about Bezos as a leader, a former CEO, I guess, is that they have raised tax avoidance to a science. You know, going back to the 90s, they've done it really well for a really long time. They've done it with the federal taxes, state and local taxes. They've done it with the income taxes they're supposed to pay, property taxes, sales taxes. They've learned organizationally to play our tax system like a pinata and to use that as the source of their comparative advantage. I can't think of another company on the planet that is as completely identified with tax avoidance as a profit center as Amazon. And that is all about Jeff Bezos and his influence. So it's pretty rich that he's expressing even pretending to express support for corporate tax reform.
Because that was their advantage for years, that you didn't pay any sales tax. That's how they, you know, that's how they got the first leg up on all this. And, you know, it goes back to, you know, behind every great billionaire is a great crime. That was really the great crime. And then they took it to, hey, we're going to do hyper lobbying. You look at the H2Q stuff where they were running around the country, having, you know, every municipality in this country, giving them demographic data and local data and all this information in the hopes that they were going to land a facility that they were never going to get. Those facilities were always going to end up in either New York or the Washington, D.C. area. They were never going to go to Dubuque. They were never going to Pittsburgh. They were never going to Cleveland. It was never happening. But what we did is we gave them all kinds of free research that the taxpayers paid for in the hopes of possibly landing this gem of a facility that was nothing but a wish and a hope and a prayer.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, and it definitely comes back to this sort of discretionary idea we are talking about with price increases. You know, Amazon's U.S. income last year was $35 billion, on which they paid a 6% federal tax rate. In the 4 years of the, what I'll call the Trump tax era, since the 2017 tax cuts took effect, the company's made almost $80 billion in the U.S. and has paid $4 billion in tax on that, 5.1% tax rate. They have the cash on hand, both Amazon as a company and Bezos as an individual, to do whatever they want in terms of expansion, capital investment, HQ2, HQ5, right? Yeah. I mean, they could do it all. And the notion that tax incentives were ever going to be instrumental in deciding where he was going to build what he wanted to build was laughable on his face.
Yeah. And we gave him the money. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Matthew Gardner. Matthew's a senior fellow at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. ITEP.org is their website if you want to check out the work that they do there. Now, I want to get your thoughts on this, because I've been saying we've given these corporations all of this money. In fact, we've given them so much in the way of tax breaks that they have more money than they know what to do with. The argument it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, the argument was we're going to give them all of this tax money back so that they're the smart ones. They know what to do with it. They're going to invest in new facilities, new equipment, and new opportunities to build more capacity, to hire more people, all this stuff. It was supposed to be the snowball rolling downhill so the economy, the pie gets bigger. And in the end, we, the little working peons, we benefit because there'll be more jobs. Explain to me how it's possible that they've run out of capacity and ideas when all they seem to be doing is buying back their stocks and enriching themselves. Because that seems to me like they're saying, yeah, we've got so much, we don't know what to do with it. We've got no more productive use for this money than buying back stock. It seems like a surrender to me.
Yeah. Well, and you know, of course, there are, you can imagine worse things they could do with their money than buying back stock. At least the shareholders get rich. I argue
a better use for it would be just putting it in a giant pit and lighting it on fire, because at least we'll get warm from it. At least the working people of this country would get some benefit from it. I don't care about the wealthy industrial shareholders who've gotten their pockets lined. I don't care about the billionaire class that our lack of opportunity, lack of education, lack of healthcare opportunities have been taken from us. I don't care about them. They're right. Well-heeled, well taken care of. They got their lobbyists. I'm worried about the single mother who can't figure out how to put formula in her child. I'm worried about the veteran who's homeless. I'm worried about the working family that's struggling. I'm worried about the people like me in my neighborhood who are worried about their kids going to college. I'm worried about those folks. I'm not worried about Bezos or Gates or Musk or any of them. They'll be fine. It's the rest of us, Matt.
Right. And, you know, in advance of the 2017 tax cuts, some pretty explicit promises were made about how it wouldn't be about stock buybacks. You know, folks like us were saying sensibly, a lot of economists were, that at a time when companies are already sitting on record stockpiles of cash and profits, that if they wanted to make capital investments, they were in a position to do so if they saw the demand for their products. And if they weren't making those investments, it was because they wouldn't have made any sense to make them. So, you know, that was what sensible people were saying at the time. And you just had these pie in the sky promises, you know, the same sort of promises we've been hearing since the Reagan supply side tax cuts of 1981, about how if you just unleash the private economy by giving more money to these already rich companies, we'd see just a wave of new capital investment. It's never happened before, and it didn't happen this last time around. Yeah. All indications are, as you point out, that the main effect was stock buybacks. You know, the capital investment was growing before the tax cuts. It kept growing for a while after the tax cuts. But you'd really be hard-pressed to see some kind of meaningful effect where the tax cuts actually unleashed anything like the wave of investment, the wave of prosperity, or the wave of job growth and salary growth that was promised ahead of time. So yeah, it was pretty clearly a bad idea at the time, and in retrospect appears to be a real missed opportunity, because you know we had leverage in the sense for corporate tax reform in 2017, in the sense that there were two things that people agreed on were needed to be remedied about our tax system. One was that at 35% our rate on paper was, you know, clearly higher than what most other countries had. The other was that the reason we had that was because we taxed so little of U.S. profits. Something like half of all the profits reported by big companies every year go untaxed. And so when you have a skinny tax base, you need a higher tax rate to make up for it. The sensible strategy of reform would have been to broaden the base, get to a place where we're taxing all business income. And that makes it easier to sustainably lower the tax rate. In 2017, we answered all the easy questions. How far do we want to cut the tax rate down to 21%, which is what Trump pushed through, without really answering any of the difficult questions about how to get companies to pay the statutory rate on their income. That's why we're still seeing the Amazons of the world paying now a quarter of the statutory tax rate in the first 4 years of the Trump era.
Yeah, and we wonder why, you know, Main Street's getting clobbered. And this is where I talk to my Chamber of Commerce friends on the local level. You're getting clobbered by these big behemoths. You're getting clobbered by these monsters who can hire teams of attorneys to avoid the taxes that you have to pay. This is that moment where we should be talking about breaking up some of these monsters. You want to know about our supply chain issues? It's got a lot to do with consolidation. You want to know why there's no baby formula on the shelves? It's because you got four companies who represent 90% of the market. You want to know why meat prices are through the roof? It's because you got a handful of companies that represent the vast majority of the market. You want to know if food prices are up? You got a handful of companies that control the vast majority of the market. This is the problem of our moment and of our day. And I look at somebody like Bernanke, Ben Bernanke, the former Fed Reserve chairman, saying, you know, oh, we're in the moment of stagflation. You know, this is coming back. I see this. And I'm going, I don't know that I'm willing to go there yet. I want to know who's the next generation of Teddy Roosevelt. Who's going to start busting out these trusts? I want to know who the next Harry Truman is. I want some commissions finding out what about these profiteers who are screwing the consumers over. I want to start using our government as a hammer instead of, you know, something that just gets beat up all the time.
Yeah, and I think you've put your finger there on. I'm not going to make any forecast about whether Bernanke is right about stagflation. I threw away my crystal ball in 2016 for all purposes, but I think you've put your finger on part of the problem, which, you know, you mentioned the baby formula industry, which, you know, it's not an oligopoly, but it's pretty darn close. The more you have these industries facing consolidation, and we're seeing it everywhere, you know, across every sector of the economy, the more you have consolidation, the more pricing power we're giving companies. And, you know, Amazon's the extreme example of this, of course. But, you know, when you don't have real competition, that makes it easier for companies to jack up their prices at a time like this, not because they're facing higher costs, but because they have sort of a smokescreen to do so.
Because they can.
That, I think, is the kernel of truth behind what, to get back to our original question, what President Biden was tweeting about the other day, this idea that of a linkage between inflation and corporate taxes. When we don't even try to tax the profits of the biggest and most profitable companies around, especially when they're companies like Amazon that have made, you know, a lifestyle choice out of crowding out brick and mortar retailers over, you know, it's increasingly taking control of the entire retail sector, that's putting an awful lot of price power in the hands of a very small number of CEOs. And yes, if we have a corporate tax system that works and that has the effect of maybe not breaking up the monopolies, breaking up the oligopolies, but having more of a level playing field between smaller retailers and the bigger companies like Amazon, that is going to be helpful in the long run for all of us, for our economy, for our capacity to buy things at the grocery store in an affordable way.
Yep, I'm right there with you. Matthew, I appreciate the time. Great stuff as always. Keep up the great work. I hope folks will take a look at the website, ITEP.org. Matthew Gardner is a senior fellow over at the Institute for on Taxation and Economic Policy. Make sure you check out their site. Matthew, appreciate the time, man.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Good stuff. Let's take a quick break. Love to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1979. That was the day we lost one of the giants of the U.S. labor movement, A. Philip Randolph.
A. Philip Randolph spent his life working for black workers and the cause of labor. He organized the first national black union to be recognized by the American Federation of Labor, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. The fight for union recognition took 12 years, and the porters signed their first contract in 1937. Randolph went on to lead the effort to desegregate war industries and armed services during and after World War II. He was one of the leading organizers of the 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, one of the most memorable actions of the civil rights movement. He also worked tirelessly to break down discrimination within the labor movement. He was elected the first black vice president of the AFL-CIO in 1955. Randolph's dedication to the cause of labor was summed up when he said, quote, "The essence of trade unionism is social uplift. The labor movement has been the haven for the dispossessed, the despised, the neglected, the downtrodden, the poor." But Randolph also consistently declared that no movement for social justice can be complete unless it is also inclusive. While organizing for the desegregation of the war industries during World War II, Phillips argued, quote, "Equality is the heart and essence of democracy, freedom and justice, equality of opportunity in industry, in labor unions, schools and colleges, government, politics, and before the law. There must be no dual standard of justice, no dual rights, privileges, duties, or responsibilities of citizenship. No dual forms of freedom." Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Quick shout out to the workers out in Los Angeles, members of SEIU Local 721. Their members won the largest general salary increase in L.A. County history. Good on them. Landmark three-year agreement. They said one of the biggest one-year general salary increases, a 5.5% increase, plus a over $1,300 signing bonus. That impressive. And this, again, this is why you organize. And for me, if you want to deal with inflation, you want to deal with how we make this not such an issue for workers, we increase their wages. We give them the right to collectively bargain and fight for better wages, hours, conditions, so that, you know, look, nobody likes going to the gas station. You know, my son's learning to drive, and we've got to do, I think it's 60 hours of driving. And I sat down and I started doing the math on how much 60 hours of him behind the wheel is now going to cost me. And I'm going, you know, the 15 miles to a gallon, you know, 60 miles an hour. Started doing all this math and cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And we filled up. It was $93 to fill up the truck. And I'm going, I don't know that I can afford this. I think you're going to have to walk. Nobody likes it. Nobody. You know, and look, everyone's angry and rightfully so. But again, where I go to, misplaced anger. If our wages were keeping up with the cost of inflation, if our wages kept up to where $93, you know, wasn't, you know, our entire week's salary for some people, it wouldn't be as hard to swallow. If we were taxing these oil companies at a pace, and this is where my belief structure is. You know, back in the old days, back in the golden age of the economy, back in the 50s and 60s, the corporate tax rate was in the 50% range. You know, they had a really high tax rate. So they didn't give out huge compensation to CEOs. In fact, average CEO to worker pay was like 20 to 1, as where it's like 300-400 to 1 now, in some places 1,000 to 1. So they use that money more efficiently. They used it to reinvest in their businesses. That is the right way to go about things. We're at a moment right now where corporate America is literally telling us, we don't know what to do with all the money you're giving us. We have no productive use for the money other than to buy back our shares and enrich ourselves. So we've given them this resource that we used to use to build roads and bridges and invest in education and healthcare and opportunities and do all pay our bills.
We used to use that money in a variety of ways. And you can go back to the 50s and you can look at, you know, what we invested in, a highway system that was second to none globally. We invested it in our people. Housing for, you know, for GIs, education, you name it. We invested in it. That money's not there anymore because we gave it to, well, the creation of a billionaire class. It's time. It's time for us to wake up to the reality that we need to claw that back. If you've got no productive use for it, we've got uses for it. We can make lives better. Your life, my life, the lives of the working class. We can make it better. We can. You and me. That simple.